The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. Producing from someplace in Virginia, I think it is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio in New York. And, you know, I was going to make more jokes at your expense about all the drinking you're going to do over the next 4 days, Taylor. But you want to talk about a controversial call in a Little League game?
Yes, exactly. I did have I was reliving suburban life last night. I went to my nephew's Little League baseball game. I did have a roadie, a little water bottle filled with wine. But important to discuss here, my guy Toby is a stud at baseball. He had an inside the park 3 RBI home run. He struck out 2 batters to close out the game, but he was involved in the controversial play at home plate. He reached base after being hit by a pitch and eventually got to third and scored on an infield single, but he slid headfirst into home. And apparently that is against Little League rules. The umpire called him out because of it. I was fit to be tied. I gave a weak call ump from the stands. Apparently that's a rule. I want to know your thoughts on it. It's got to be a safety thing, but I don't know. It seemed very strange to me that you cannot slide headfirst into a base.
No, that doesn't surprise me. And see, you don't have kids yet. And so if you had kids, you would know that lawyers are involved in everything these days. And at some point, some lawyers said, we probably don't want players sliding in head first. We want them to slide in feet first because they're less likely to have injuries. I hope you were ejected when you were razzing a Little League umpire.
It was a very light razzing. My wife tapped me on the leg and she said, stop. I obliged. And my brother-in-law went out and had a word with the ump, and the umpire actually told him that if he had run back to third base and slid in headfirst, that would have been fine. So I don't really know what's going on over there. He's probably going to protest and try and get that run back, because run differential, big deal in McLean Little League, apparently.
Well, oh my God. I can't imagine you at a Little League game drinking and yelling at umpires, but you know.
We have fun.
We'll have to hang on to that and see. It's a preview of what's to come over the weekend for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get to the news and notes of the day. Padres star shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. tested positive for COVID-19, as did Will Myers, who was pulled from the Padres game during the course of Tuesday evening. Tatis Jr. currently has no symptoms, according to manager Jace Tingler. Outfielder Jerickson Profar, shortstop Jorge Mateo, first baseman Eric Hosmer have been sidelined for contact tracing and isolation. They're not the only developing situation when it comes to COVID-19. Yankees third base coach Phil Nevin tested positive for coronavirus. This, despite the fact that he'd been vaccinated. At least one other coach has tested positive. Marley Rivera of ESPN has reported that 5 coaches on the Yankees have tested positive. So that is a situation to watch as we go forward. Here's the good thing is, the Yankees had all this happen on Monday and Tuesday, and they played on Tuesday night. The Oakland Athletics are going to explore possible relocation if they can't get a ballpark deal in Oakland. Major League Baseball said in a statement, we have instructed the Athletics to begin to explore other markets while they continue to pursue a waterfront ballpark in Oakland. Carl Ravitch and I are going to be talking extensively about the situation and what cities might be involved. New York Mets ace Jacob DeGrom played catch yesterday. He plans to mull his mechanics. He told reporters yesterday he doesn't think that his situation that forced him to the injured list is a big deal. All right, let's get to the good stuff. What a crazy game in Detroit. The Tigers had a 7-0 lead, but blew that lead in the 8th and 9th innings. Score was 7-all, bottom of the 9th, and this happened.
Grossman still waiting on the 1-2. Here we go, the pitch. Swinging a shot to first, and it's by Santana down the right field line. Goodrum around third. Dyson's throw, not in time. Tigers win.
Dan Dickerson, 97.1, the ticket. The Cardinals, who we're going to have on Sunday Night Baseball this weekend against the San Diego Padres, they are taking off. It was 1-1, 11th inning. Paul Goldschmidt at the plate.
First pitch is hammered out to deep left. It's at the wall. Two-run blast for Goldie.
Dan McLaughlin on the Cardinals television network. They win that game. Yankees, Rays in the first game of a big series down in Tampa Bay, and Aaron Judge got the Yankees started.
Now here's Aaron Judge, and the pitch is swung on and drilled to deep center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone off the back wall. A long home run for Aaron Judge. In fact, a Judgian blast. Now he now comes around third, and here comes the Judge.
That, of course, John Sterling and WFAN. The Yankees win that game 3-1. The Blue Jays, the Braves, and it was a showdown between two great young hitters. Ronald Acuna Jr. went deep, and then Vladimir Guerrero Jr. followed in the top of the sixth.
Guerrero with a fly ball, well hit right field, and it's gone. An opposite field two-run homer for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and just like that, this game is tied.
I know that voice. Dan Shulman on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Blue Jays win the game 5-3. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. And you know who was making moves last night? How about Shohei Ohtani? He was amazing for the Angels. Pitching, 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. And then he moved out to right field later in the game. But you know what? After he left the mound, the Astros did some damage.
2-0. And that's hammered down the left field line, and that ball is gone! Into the Landry's Crawford boxes. A 3-run home run for Yuli Gurriel, and the Astros lead it 5-1.
That was Robert Ford, KBME 790 AM, and a big moment for Gavin Lux. The Dodgers were down 4-1 last night against Seattle. They cut the Mariners' lead to 4-3 in the seventh inning, and then in the eighth, Lux came to the plate with a couple of runners on base.
Lux kills the ball way back there. His biggest big league swing. A go-ahead 3-run home run.
That was Joe Davis on the Dodgers television network. Now, before we get to Carl Ravitch and to Hembo, the NBA play-in tournament is happening May 18th through the 21st. And I'm well aware of the playoff situation in the East because my son is a huge fan of the Charlotte Hornets. He's been going crazy. It's a new exciting twist to determine who makes the playoffs in both conferences. The 7th through 10th place teams vying for the 7th and 8th spots. Some teams are currently playing to avoid the tournament. Others are desperately trying to get in. At the end of the regular season, the 7th and 8th place teams square off. The winner gets locked into the 7th seed. The loser plays the winner of the game between the 9th and 10th place teams. The winner of that game clinches the 8th seed. ESPN is your home for all the drama. Wednesday, May 19th and Friday, May the 21st. I guarantee you my son will be watching. And keep up with all that drama as the postseason picture is settled by listening to the Hoop Collective, the Woj Pod, the Low Post, and Jalen and Jacoby wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Ravi Train with Carl Ravitch.
The Ravi Train all over the place. Ravi, what's the next stop for you?
The next stop actually is Sunday night. We just did two games, and now Sunday night, baseball tonight, and then a game on Monday. So the Rabbit Train is going in for a little repair. It's got to grease the skids, make sure the brakes are still good, because we've been going pretty good for the entirety of this season, which is great. We want to keep doing it.
Yeah, it feels like whenever I turn on the television, I turn over, there you are. You know, you're doing a call of some game. Of course, Carl Ravitch, the host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN. And Carl, look, I think generally speaking, people around baseball, people around the country are feeling better about the COVID situation. But yesterday, man, baseball right in the middle of it. The Padres lose Fernando Tatis Jr. He tests positive. Will Myers test positive? Jorge Mateo, Jurickson Profar, Eric Hosmer, all, you know, essentially put in protocol. They're waiting test results. And they have to play a doubleheader today, as of today anyway, or as of this morning. And then the Yankees last night, Phil Nevin, who had been vaccinated, Johnson & Johnson, he tests positive. There are other positive tests as well. This does feel like a punch in the stomach for baseball, you know, given the fact that it has felt like that they've had so relatively few cases since the beginning of spring training.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a glancing blow. I think, look, if this were last year, and obviously we had it last year, it was a big punch in the stomach. It was a punch in the face. It was a knockdown punch. I think that, you know, the good news about the Yankees case in particular is they were able to go. Now, the Padres may be a little different if they discover more and more players. But our ability as a country, certainly baseball's ability as a sport to deal with COVID is something that has clearly improved dramatically since last year. So, look, it's a wake-up call. It's a reminder, if nothing else, that the vaccines don't prevent you from getting COVID. It seems to, based on the science, prevent you from getting seriously sick. In fact, Phil Nevin texted us during our game last night from his quarantine room after Eduardo Perez talked about the importance of coaches, third base coach, first base coach. The Yankees were without both last night, to thank Eduardo for saying that. He's feeling fine. So, yeah, I think it is a reminder, like, in spite of vaccines, it's still out there, and you should do what you can to try to mitigate transmission. Again, all speculation, but once you get vaccinated, and I've been, you tend to feel a little more free. And in feeling a little more free, you participate in activities that you probably hadn't, or at least I hadn't, you know, the prior year and a half, and now, you know, you're feeling a little bit better, and that just means you're likely to be more exposed. And again, our ability as a country and sport to deal with it, to me, makes it feel less of a gut punch, knockout punch, than it does a kind of a glancing blow and a reminder like, hey, tap you on the shoulder, still here.
Yeah, and listening to Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, talk before last night's game, he did give great perspective on it, because you can imagine that if this had happened on opening day last year, you know, that same day that Juan Soto tested positive, the Yankees, people around baseball, there would have been enormous concern. Instead, the Yankees, who, as you know, have really felt like that they've done a good job. You know, Zach Britton, Gerrit Cole, who are the player representatives, have done a great job in leading this group of players. The coaching staff has acted in concert. You know, they have worked together in trying to deal with this. They feel like that, you know, that they have a handle on it. So when this happens yesterday, when the initial question was, boy, are they going to play? The Yankees, after, you know, they got this news, Britton, Cole talked to the players. They said, no, we're good to go. We'll bring in, you know, we'll move our coaching staff around a little bit and we'll deal with it.
Yeah, Mooney also told us that they had known about this since Monday, which was their off day. So they weren't telling anybody, and they started the contact trace. And Aaron's had the vaccines, and, you know, what happens when you get the vaccines and you're fully vaccinated? I didn't understand what the protocols then were for Major League Baseball's testing, but he said, you know, they were down, those vaccinated, to two tests a week. Obviously, last year, it was test every day, and it was fairly routine that you would go to the ballpark, and before you could even go in, you get tested. But once vaccinated, you're down to two tests a week. So while I think we're going to find, you know, the cases are so small and so few and far between, when you are vaccinated and then you're testing far more rarely, there's a chance that it's going to uncover things that you obviously didn't know prior. And it may be that there's more than one case running around. To those who may not be vaccinated, and obviously to those who have been vaccinated. So there is a change in the way that Major League Baseball is treating COVID-19 for those that are vaccinated, and fewer tests is one of them. So imagine for some reason you contracted on a Monday, but because you're fully vaccinated, we don't test until Thursday of that week. Well, there's a chance if you have it, you're passing it around and we won't know about it until Thursday. And as a result, there may be multiple guys that have been exposed to it and have contracted it. So I don't know if they reconsider the way that they test because of these outbreaks like Nevin, which is, again, aberrational because he's vaccinated. But that may be something they consider.
All right. Shohei Ohtani last night. It looks like that, you know, he's figured this out. The Angels have figured this out. You know, he's already got 10 home runs for the season. He's in the early conversation for American League MVP. And last night against the Astros, 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. And then late in the game, Carl, he moves to right field. Now, it's the same old Angels. I think you would agree with me that you've got greatness at the top of the roster. You know, Mike Trout, yep, having his best season, Ohtani, and pitching issues below, which is are holding them down. But man, Ohtani is exactly what we hoped he would be when he first came over here.
Yeah, we did the Angels game Monday, and they beat the Astros. Their bullpen was really good. Starting pitching wasn't great, but they need Ohtani to play as often as he can. They're not a great team. They've obviously just gone through the whole Pujols story. Jared Walsh is great. Fletcher is really good. Trout is outstanding. Ohtani is critical. They need him to play. So if he's not pitching, we need the bat. We need the speed. We saw him beat out an infield ground ball the other day. Like, they're not in a position to say, like maybe the Yankees, who have so many offensive weapons, you know, Aaron Judge has some lower leg issues, we're going to sit him. The Angels don't afford that luxury. And yes, it is rooted in their pitching. But if you don't have good pitching, you're going to have to score a lot of runs. And the better way to do that is with Shohei Ohtani on the field and hitting. So I think they have figured it out, but it's also out of necessity as much as it is this desire to have him play as often as possible. To me, Buster, he's the MVP of the league if he keeps doing what he's doing, even with Mike Trout, because it's unique, because it's a contribution that even Mike Trout can't make. He's not going on the mound and pitching. Ohtani, if this continues, to me, is the MVP of the league.
So far this year, the Angels in last place in the American League West, 16-19. They're 5 games out. But I think you would agree with me, it's still really early, because I don't look at the Athletics or the Astros being teams that are great. You know, the Mariners are at 500. They got Kelnick being activated this week, being called up to the big leagues this week. We still haven't seen the Angels with a fully healthy Anthony Rendon teaming with Ohtani, right, teaming with Trout.
I would agree. To me, the Astros, when they get Framber Valdez back and some of their injured guys, they are really good. That offense is really good. I think Dusty's in a great place. I think they understand what they are and who they are. I think a year removed from the scandal, they've developed a bit of a callus around it, and they're able to deal with the booze, et cetera, and trash cans. They're dangerous. They're a great team. Michael Brantley in the middle of that thing, he's so good. Kyle Tucker 2 weeks ago couldn't hit a baseball with a tennis racket. You cannot get him out right now. I think Houston poses the biggest challenge still in that division. And we'll see. I mean, I'm excited about Kelnick coming up to Seattle. There's a lot of these guys. Wander Franco in Tampa Bay, the same way the AL East. The Yankees are a game behind the Red Sox now in the loss column, 2 games in the standings. It's way too early because of what we've seen. And just on a side note, like last night, Aroldis Chapman, and I don't know if you saw it, but in the ninth inning, he threw 2 pitches at 100 miles an hour that were unhittable. He's having the best year, you know, of his life, or at least the best start to a year. And again, Luke Voit comes back. They look and feel like a whole different team than they did a week and a half ago.
Yeah, and I know that they were excited to get Luke Voit back, not only because of his production, you know, leading the American League in home runs last year, but also because of his swagger. You know, Stanton is a great player, but, you know, he's a steady personality. Aaron Judge, the same way. I know from talking with Yankee people, they just love how much confidence that Luke plays with.
He had a nightmare start to the game. Gleyber Torres threw a ball kind of off the bag. He had a stretch. He winced a little bit, of course, off the torn meniscus. Then he gets drilled in the hand by a pitch. look, you go through Judge, you go through Stanton, you know, you get to Urshela, and the next guy up is Luke Voit. That's a drain on a pitching staff. That causes stress. That makes their life more challenging. Luke Voit's presence, as well as lengthening the lineup, strengthening their mojo on and off the field. I'll be honest, as great as the season was in 2020, I didn't realize the impact that he had overall until you looked at the numbers that the Yankees substitute first baseman were putting up, and they were below league average. OPS, way below the league average for first baseman, which was 400. They were in the threes. So, yes, and you could just tell last night he almost hit a ball to the warning track in right field. They're a different team, and again, you're going to see, to me, you'll see Judge and Stanton go ups and downs. If Voit is going to be as consistent as he was last year, that's a huge deal for them.
I want to ask you about Madison Bumgarner, who, Ravi, looks like he's back. And I got to say, it surprised me when, you know, he obviously was a dominant pitcher for a lot of years, and then we saw regression as his fastball velocity went down, which surprised me because I always thought that as he got older, he would be a guy who would figure it out because he's so competitive.
Yep.
He's got that funky delivery, you know, his understanding of how to beat hitters, the confidence that he has. So when he was getting pounded, I was like, wow, I figured he'd be more like a, you know, an Andy Pettit, Jamie Moyer type who would use what he had and find a way to get hitters out. Well, in the last five starts, 3 earned runs allowed in 30 innings, 34 strikeouts, and 2 walks. Pretty cool.
It's really cool for a guy that, you know, was as good a pitcher during their World Series runs as we've ever seen, you know, coming out of the bullpen, et cetera. He exuded a certain level of macho that we didn't see from many others, if any. And, you know, I think he was wheeled a little bit by his inability to get guys out. I do think that that macho is back. You can see it. It's kind of as if he literally has gone back to the gunslinger mentality. The delivery to me is what makes him different. You know, Zach Greinke is a great example of somebody who continues to reinvent himself. And you can see Zach, if he wanted to pitch for another 4 or 5 years, just because of his creativity. Bumgarner, it felt like, depended a lot on his velocity and that you're going to try to hit me. Don't worry, I will put you under my thumb. Some of that feels like it's back. And again, just watching his performance yesterday, the way he throws the baseball and delivers it, especially to lefties, it does feel like you have no chance. He's not a Roldis Chapman, but there's a part of you that looks at Bumgarner and says, if he's on, they're not going to hit him again. He's in that mode. And who knows, if the Diamondbacks really struggle, you know, he's going to be a name that people are going to say, let's go get Madison Bumgarner with all his postseason experience and what he's doing. He jumps to the top of the list as far as pitchers you may want to get during a stretch run.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, we heard last year how the Diamondbacks were having some financial issues. His contract is especially backloaded. You know, he took a very low salary in his first year with the team. This is year two. He's got 3 years left, which means that a lot of money is there that the Diamondbacks may want to shed. I completely agree with you. He's going to be an interesting name before the trade deadline. I got 3 minutes left with you. I want to ask you about the Oakland ballpark situation. This felt like a well-coordinated military operation, Carl, to set up pressure on the city of Oakland and to begin to clear the decks, not only for the Oakland Athletics, but also potentially for Major League Baseball to advance the conversation about expansion teams, because you and I both know they don't want to get into that until they settle the Oakland and Tampa Bay situations.
Yeah, I mean, the old saying is it takes a village. Sometimes it takes an army. I agree with you in the concerted effort here that came out yesterday. Look, the Oakland situation is embarrassing. There's no reason that this new minor league agreement now tends to treat those minor league players better than it does the Oakland A's and the major league facility that they play in. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. It needs to change. And if the roadblocks continue to be put up, it's not a reflection of the fans who are great. It's not a reflection of the players. It is a reflection of the inability and inflexibility of a city that seemed to have very little trouble building a brand new facility for the Golden State Warriors to move across the bay. You've got to do better than what you've been doing, because it really isn't right for the players and the team to have to deal with that. You have other options, and if you know, if you're not willing to figure out a way to keep them there, and you've tried allegedly, and I believe it, but it keeps running into these roadblocks, find another place. And clearly, whether it's Las Vegas or Nashville or Charlotte, there's other places. And I agree with Major League Baseball or the team. We got to go. We got to go now. It's crazy. It's really embarrassing.
Yeah, and to put this into proper context, baseball formed a blue ribbon panel to study the Oakland ballpark situation in 2006. I have no feel for how this is going to turn out, because I would not want to be a politician in this post-pandemic world asking taxpayers for their money for a ballpark. But you know what? You go to Oakland, say you want the team. You don't want you want the team. Great. Let's work it out. You don't want the team. That's fine, too. We got other places to go. I still think of Nashville, and I guess I'm biased because I lived there for 8 years, right, as being, right, you know, somehow, some way, Nashville is going to have a team within 5 years.
Wouldn't surprise me, but I mean, the NFL team in Las Vegas, to me, the door is now open, and that's where teams and leagues are going to go.
All right, Robbie, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks, Buster. See you Sunday.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbicati is a researcher for ESPN who's becoming famous for being the sidekick for Mike Greenberg on his radio show as well as on the show Get Up. Hembo, how you doing this week?
Buster, I'm doing great, and I'm glad to hear that you have finally elevated me, my introduction. I'm no longer this wild partier who is now made fun of at the beginning of every one of my segments. I'm now a sidekick. I mean, it's a slow-moving process, but I'm happy to move on from my teenage years, I have to say.
Yeah, but I did make fun of you when I was on Get Up the other day, right?
You did make fun of me when you were on Get Up the other day. I did not appreciate it, but you know what? Like, usually, I don't mind your subtle jab so much as I do when I give you a trivia question, you answer it correctly, and then you dunk on me without, you know, the opportunity for me to defend myself. So I'll let that one slide. We just can't allow it to get much worse than that.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I kind of like that when it's on a live show and it's scripted and you got the producer and you're saying, move it along, wrap, get your answer done. And then I can just take a shot at you and go, and you're sitting there helpless on the side.
It's low hanging fruit. Helpless is not a position I prefer to be in. So next time you come on the show, maybe I won't give you Babe Ruth as the answer to the trivia question. We'll say that much.
All right. In Madison Bumgarner's last five starts, 3 earned runs allowed in 30 innings, 34 strikeouts and 2 walks. And I was mentioning to Carl Ravitch that I was kind of surprised when Bumgarner had some struggles in recent years, because I always thought of him as being a guy, as he got older, he would figure it out. You know, we saw CC Sabathia figure it out after a time as he lost velocity. And I always thought Madison would be that kind of guy. What about you?
Yeah, I did too. And I was a lot more optimistic about the Diamondback signing him than most people were. Obviously, in year one, that looked like an absolute disaster. But for as adaptable as he likely is and how smart he is as a pitcher, you know as well as I do that Madison Bumgarner is also a very stubborn person. So I would have to imagine that an offseason to sort of stew over how bad he was last year and the modifications that he's made to his game as a result of it obviously are yielding outstanding results. And that's a club that's kind of interesting. And I think he's having a really nice effect on some of the young pitchers on that staff. We're not talking about the Diamondbacks all that much, but he's a really good figure to be at the top of your rotation. And look, he has the kind of stuff that theoretically should age really, really well. He's crafty, does not rely on velocity nearly as much as most pitchers. A lot of his stuff is more side to side and not up and down. You can count me in on Madison Bumgarner being able to put this together and have a really nice comeback season.
Yeah, and maybe finishing up well. And I was talking with Ravi, and he mentioned the possibility that Bumgarner could be a guy who would be coveted at the trade deadline. I totally agree with that because of his experience and how well he's pitching now. Now, his contract was incredibly backloaded. Last year, 2020, $6 million salary. This year, that's jumped up to $19 million. And then for the next 2 years, 22, 23, $23 million a year. 2024, $14 million. You know, I've heard stuff around the edges, how the Diamondbacks, like a lot of teams, some financial concerns, you know, through 2020. I got to believe that, you know, in a division in which they're competing with the Dodgers, the Padres, the Giants, that you might see the Diamondbacks take advantage of him throwing well and see if they can dump the contract. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. Although I will say, I'd be really surprised if they were a team that was willing to give you an awful lot of capital and take on the full contract. So the Diamond, even if he pitches super well. So the Diamondbacks are a club that in that case might have to just sort of swallow it. Would we rather get a nice return of prospects and have to pay some of that salary? Or would we rather just get rid of the deal, sort of, you know, cleanse our books, for lack of a better term? I think they'll probably choose the latter, which is another reason why the contract even originally was so curious, because it didn't feel at the time that Madison Bumgarner was going to have a whole bunch of offers like that. He obviously landed there. If he continues to pitch this well, he should absolutely be at the center of the trade discussion sometime come July.
And the perfect comp for the Bumgarner situation, I think you would agree with me, would be Yu Darvish, right? Who had a great season in 2020, great showing for the Cubs, and they dump his contract while eating a little bit of money.
Yeah, that's the thing that the Padres have been able to really take advantage of. And there are probably a few other teams in baseball that could also take advantage of the fact that if we can spend money at a time in which most people cannot, then it behooves us to do so. And given that, it can almost turn into something of a market inefficiency.
So we're going to let the listeners have a peek behind the curtain. We're in the middle of taping this segment with Hembo, and all of a sudden his phone rings. He's got a producer calling, or maybe his agent or somebody else there. Hembo, I don't think we're that far from that time when you don't even answer our phone calls and you just say, can you talk to my people and maybe they can work it out so that I could come on your show occasionally.
I can assure you, Buster, that it was not my agent. It was no representation of mine. It was merely the coordinating producer back in Bristol needing me to print a couple extra sheets of paper for Mike Greenberg, who I guess there was a few things in the 9 o'clock, top of the 9 o'clock segment today on Get Up that didn't make the first cut. So that's what I did. That's the thrilling peek behind the curtain that you just offered our listeners. Thrilling,
yeah.
I know.
Taylor, you want to jump in here? I think you'll agree with me on this one.
Oh yeah, I mean, Hembo long been a diva. He's, you know, he's always put me down behind the scenes about my barbecuing because, you know, he's got the Traeger. I'm a Weber Smoky Mountain guy. You know, at least we find common ground in our love of pop punk. But yeah, he's slowly changing before our eyes.
Yeah, I'm better than both of you. I'm better than both of you, if we're just to be honest.
Hembo, are you good to go? Did you get your flavored water? Did you get fruit? Has any production assistant looked at you behind the scenes and that's upset you, or are we good to go and move forward here with the notes?
We're good to go. We don't need to allow listeners to get a full peek into my character because I'm not sure anyone will listen to my segment anymore.
All right, Shohei Ohtani was fun last night. He's becoming who we thought he was.
Yeah, we are who you thought you were. So Shohei Ohtani, this guy's unbelievable. Reach two strikes at your own risk against this guy. Hitting Shohei Ohtani in a two-strike count is the most difficult thing to do in baseball right now, Buster. Opposing hitters are 1-for-52. 1-for-52 with 40 strikeouts against Ohtani with two strikes this season. That hit was a weak single, for whatever it's worth. The only pitcher with a higher two-strike strikeout rate than Ohtani this season is, you guessed it, Jacob DeGrom.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. One of his teammates who's flying under the radar because Mike Trout's having an incredible season and Ohtani's been great is Jared Walsh. What do you got on him?
Jared Walsh is the least talked about great hitter in baseball right now, Buster. Dating to September of last season, Walsh leads baseball in hitting at .338 and he owns the fifth best batting line in the big leagues. And the underlying numbers, Buster, say it's legit. During that time, he's hitting .405 against fastballs and .314 against off-speed pitches. So he's not a one-trick pony. Secondly, he owns an OPS north of 1,000 on pitches on the inner half and on the outer half. So pitchers can't split the plate in two against him. And lastly, he ranks third in your favorite stat, Buster, crush quotient, which measures total bases per swing. During that time, he sits behind only Mike Trout and Jose Ramirez. He has been that good, and it's not just this season.
Wow. Yeah, I remember our first Sunday night game. Mike Trout was mic'd up for us, and he was talking during the game like, nope, can't get a fastball past him. Can't get a fastball past this guy, and he hit the walk-off home run that night. What do you got on Giancarlo Stanton?
The Yankees have won 13 of 18, and I think he is the biggest reason why. He's batting .409 with a 1223 OPS over that span. But it's not his power that has most impressed me, Buster. It's his two-strike approach. Stanton has 14 two-strike hits over his last 16 games. That is five more two-strike hits than he had in 2019 and 2020 combined. We obviously well know of his prolific power. But look, if a player like that is willing to choke and poke with two strikes, there is nobody in baseball who shouldn't modify their approach with two strikes. What say you?
What say I is that we are going to have the Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball in June, maybe a couple times, and I'll be stealing that note from you. So I greatly appreciate that.
Outstanding.
Speaking of the Yankees, a Yankee Hall of Famer, it would have been his birthday today, 91. Yogi Berra, what you got on him?
Yeah, Buster, Yogi Berra is a legend, and I maintain the opinion that his 1950 season is among the most underappreciated in the history of baseball. It was not amongst his three MVP seasons. Buster, in 1950, Yogi became the first catcher to hit 25 homers in a season while scoring and driving in 100 runs that season. He struck out 12 times in that season, 148 games behind the plate, and he threw out more than half of would-be base stealers. Parenthetically, the Yankees swept the Phillies in the World Series that season. For as famous and charismatic as Yogi Berra became in his later years, I think his days as a player have become somewhat underappreciated because he was so colorful in his post-playing days. But in doing some research in advance of his birthday today, I was reminded just how brilliant a player he was. And I think his best season was one in which he finished third for the MVP voting and not amongst the three seasons in which he won the MVP award.
Yeah, Hembo, I got to know Yogi. He would be in the Yankees clubhouse quite a bit after he solved his issues with George Steinbrenner. I think that was in 1999, and he would pass through. The players loved to see him. And the coolest thing about Yogi Berra as an older man was how in tune with the game he was. I remember bumping into him. It was actually at a Sopranos event. and you know, I was talking to him, and he was talking about Victor Martinez. How much he liked Victor Martinez as a catcher and how he liked hitting. And there are not a lot of guys who are that deeply into it, you know, once they've been out of the game for that long a period of time. And you mentioned about Berra's 1950 season being underappreciated. I think you'll agree with me on this. Part of the reason why was that was a time when writers, when picking the MVP was all about narrative. And the best example in baseball history, this is going to drive you crazy. In 1934, the American League MVP was not Lou Gehrig, who that year hit 49 homers, drove in 166 runs, and hit .363. He won the triple crown, 49, 166, and .363 average. He finished fifth in the MVP voting, and the guy who won was Mickey Cochran, the catcher and quote-unquote leader of the Tigers, two homers, 75 RBI, .320 batting average. Your brain would have exploded if you'd been alive in 1934.
In one of your Sunday notes column, let's set aside a time to do this in which we chronicle the worst MVP or Cy Young votes of all time, because that would obviously be amongst the list. Not only was Cochran very unimpressive in relation to Lou Gehrig, but Lou Gehrig had an all-time great season, and the Triple Crown was a stat that people cared about even then. So it's somewhat surprising, but that's a good idea to go back sometime and retroactively look at the worst misses by the MVP voters over the course of the years. I bet there'd be some doozies just like that one.
Exactly. All right, Hembo, you know, tell your assistants we'll be in touch and try to get you back on next week.
I appreciate it. My shoes are looking a little bit ragged. I'm going to go get these shined up before I head back into the studio. Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a... Wow, it's a Wednesday. My brain feels like it's a Friday. Let's go to Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning. He writes, in sports pundits are claiming the no-hitter is losing its clout despite the increase in frequency. Isn't it the opposite? They're more special now. Starting pitchers pitch less innings each year and rarely go nine. Isn't more no-hitters a return to the prominence of the starting pitcher? I like this contrarian take from Kyle after yesterday, Dave saying that, I don't know all the no-hitters anymore. Come on.
Well, and I appreciate Kyle being really polite saying yes. Sports pundits, because he could have been referring to Dave or to me.
Right.
Look, I tend to look at it this way, Kyle, just generally, it's just a mathematical, look at it mathematically. The more that you see of something, the less special they are. You know, the more home runs mm-hmm. we saw in the 1990s, the less special it was when someone hit 30 homers in a season or 500 home runs. That's how I look at it. But Kyle, I appreciate the perspective.
Next up, we have Pat Johnson at The Melting Pat. He wrote this. He says, I am currently awaiting the birth of my son. He'll probably be born by the time you see this. Congratulations, Pat. That is very exciting. And he wants to know, how old will he be when the Phillies contend again? Could they make enough improvements to do it this season?
Yeah, Pat, congratulations. That's really cool. That's awesome. And if it's your first child, boy, you are in for so much fun. They could contend this year. I think they have enough. Their front three in the rotation are excellent. They may be as good as any front three in any rotation in baseball. You know, they'll add during the course of the season, they'll add to the bullpen. Do I think that they're a great team? No, but I think they're in that, 11 to 15 range in terms of how they're playing. And Bryce Harper's having a terrific season.
Next up, we have the hunt for Red Sox October. Buster, you've said that the Yankees are the best fit for Story and Rizzo. Do you think they will get both?
No, I think they would get one or the other. And I think, as I wrote in that piece yesterday that posted on ESPN.com, that they're just not that many teams going to be out there looking for a shortstop, which is why I think in the end, the Yankees and Rockies, they might wind up being the best place, the Yankees, for the Rockies to make a deal. Story would be a terrific ad. I like Rizzo too, though. Being a left-handed hitter in Yankee Stadium, given his experience, the one thing I would say is they get Luke Voit back yesterday, and they love Luke Voit, not only for his production, but for his energy.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. That does it for me for the week. My corpse will see you bright and early on Monday morning, Buster. Can't wait.
I'm really worried about you, about the show. I feel bad for your wife. Oh, my God. I'm going to be thinking about you the whole time. Don't go too crazy, okay?
No promises, Buster. We'll do what we can.
Hey, thanks to Carl Hambo and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.